Mr. $10 man, let me tell where you're bound. Drink your green liquor, Lord, you roll to the ground. But you come around here with your money in your hand. Taste of my woman.
What an atmospheric place.
Where you die, where you stand.
So we've taken a little trip out from Llanrider. We've driven up to Glenkerriog. And we're in the Garth Garden, Organic Hillside Garden, which is 1,000 feet, I've been told.
What a pleasure it is.
And this was really just gorse. Very, very steep ground. It's kind of, I think, a bit spoiled from quarrying further up the hill. And no one valued this land. It had no value. There's a woman up above who has some grazing. And I believe that Jude Wright, the woman who instigated this garden, just went and said to her, look, are you using that bit of land? And she said, well, it's worthless, it's useless. Yeah. It's too steep, there's nothing on it, there's no soil. So she said, can I do a garden there? And I said, you try. And here we are.
I mean, my ears have popped from the journey up. This is really steep.
I told you that's the steep, one of the steepest bits of road that I know. There's no kidding, right? And look, we've got apple trees behind us. So what she's done, we're sort of on the edge of the garden, okay? And the garden kind of breaks down into gorse and wilderness. But actually what we've got here is a zone four elements of, we've got fruit trees and gooseberries and
but this is further away, stuff. So it's harder to keep on top of it.
Yeah, manage. So they're not growing, it's not growing as intensely. But we've got a lovely little seat and an arena. Look at that view, man, I mean.
And where are we looking?
Oh, look, they're taking the top of that tree out. That's interesting. I wonder if that was for the view. We're looking down the Kerriog Valley. So if you go...
You can hear the thunder coming rolling in.
You can.
This is not a sheltered place. It's
very, well, we might be legging it, but it's
a
lovely. What are we now? We're just a week or so before the winter, the summer solstice. It's lush and green.
Everything's thriving here. And flying up.
Yeah, and something I was going to bring your attention to there, Yossi, is that you've seen there's a big pile of brash and it's old dead gorse.
Yeah,
that's what the soil here is made out of. And what they've done is they've valued all these things and composted them and broken them down. And obviously, gorse is a nitrogen fixer.
Yeah.
So they've built a fertile soil in somewhere where, you wouldn't think there was anything.
And I guess they have kind of been forced to use local things, what's here, because you can't drag the manure up the hill. It's heavy.
Eventually,
you're going to do your back in.
Yeah.
So they've utilised what they have here.
They've really got into green manures. Yeah. They've made the compost everything that is even slightly, you know, vaguely compostable.
Yeah. So green manures, they're growing plants to actually cut down, not to eat.
Yes.
Just to feed the soil.
Exactly. Exactly. And they're also going out off-site around neighbouring, you know, areas with scythes and harvesting things like bracken and tall grasses and using that to build up the compost heaps
and
as well.
Things which will be discarded or left, they're utilising. And what can you see, what do we have growing around here? I mean, we've seen...
Well, we go down the hill, we're off on the edge, you can just see all lots of bracken. Mm. And bracken and gorse builds nitrogen, bracken holds on to potash.
Right.
So there's two of your key nutrients there being held in the landscape. Being trapped, which there you can just start harvesting there. There's your N and your P, or N and your K.
Yeah.
And where's the potassium going to come from? The birds. Birds cycle potassium. You want lots and lots of bird droppings.
Yeah.
And what brings them in? All of these berries and all of the black currants and the, you know, and well, I mean, blackberries would be the wild ones, but you know.
So if we look up the hill, it looks rather wild, but actually it's been cleverly planted to attract birds. You can see the berries peeking out.
Yes.
There's lots of big trees that they can nest in.
So we can say it's really permaculture because they're just working with the environment and accentuating what it wants to do already, what it is doing. Just exaggerating that. And dog sniffed something.
She's eating all the herbs, you know, yeah. This is fun for her.
So it's not really nice just to, and again, is we'll take some pictures which we can share on the PDC. And I think this is one of the places that people who want to get the principles of gardening, like using these techniques, this is a great place to see it.
Yeah.
And what's good about here is it's really challenging. It's 1,000 feet up. It's really steep. Yeah. There's no access. You know, water's a problem. Everything's a challenge. But they've somehow turned all of those things to an advantage to make it something that's very unique and special.
Yeah, so they've got a scarred piece of remote land.
Yes.
And brought it to life. This is the most lush garden I think I've visited so far. I mean, all grown. It's hard to do it justice by talking into a microphone. We'll get some pictures, which will hopefully, like you say, display.
But let's say they're probably 14 years in, right? Something like that. 14, 15 years into this project now. So, that's a long time.
Yeah.
But they've really been consistent at it. So, again, what's something Jude's very good at, the gardener, head gardener here, is his beds are never empty. Mm. They're really, you were commenting how well mulched they were. We saw straw mulch,
wool
yeah. and animal manure mulch and all sorts of things like that. And then successional planting, so there's living things in there as well. So that's once you've worked that hard to build soil.
Yeah, you don't want it washing down into the Kerioc Valley.
Absolutely do not.
Yeah.
So what a special time and place to be here.
I'm going to pick some sage before we go,
because
this is...
So I revisited our first podcast that we did, which we did right actually back in May. It was in April or something, or even in March. It was quite early on in the thing, and I think we were quite philosophical and all that sort of stuff about and quite matter of fact about the COVID-19 reality, and here we are now after 3 months. Have we been locked down for 3 months?
Yeah,
have we been quarantined for 3 months?
Three and a half months.
So, how do you feel about it now? What do you mean?
I guess the shock has given way to what they call the new reality with inverted commas, but it's as crazy as it was then.
Mm.
It's just more normal and more...
Still processing it, really.
Yeah,
and it's
yeah.
just like there's days you forget. And I was just saying, yesterday morning, it was Sunday, I woke up and I was thinking, oh, I really like to have a Sunday dinner and a nice pub and a nice pint of real ale. And I know we can't do that.
No chance.
Or even if you can, it's not going to be the same experience.
No. And
that's just a small thing, but there's a million things. Obviously, everybody's thinking these things. There's nothing special about
travel
my
and
thought, but
all these limitations, I think it means that localized food production is even more vital. I think at the beginning of this crisis with the toilet roll fiasco and people were hoarding, there wasn't actually a shortage of toilet roll. There was just a selfish attitude which caused the shortage.
I felt something about people expressing their vulnerability in a strange way with the toilet roll thing, because it's like there's those fundamental things you don't quite know how to. How do you prepare? Oh my God, the world's going to end. I don't know. How do you prepare for it? But there's a realization that we're just totally reliant on shops for our stuff.
Yeah.
And if the shops are empty, there's no stuff. Well, most people, especially in the West, in the UK, haven't really thought about what they would do. Like, I remember saying this years ago, if you turn a tap and nothing comes out, what do you do?
What do you do then?
And with permaculture and with the kind of training and the thinking that we're trying to engender, is for people to start to realise these resources are there and they're flowing through your system all the time. You just need to work out how to work with them.
Mm-hmm.
That's a bit more obscure to think about in highly urbanised situations, but the truth is that it's true for there.
Yeah.
It is actually true for those situations
too. Yeah,
definitely
shone a light on how vulnerable our food production is. And
and especially food. Like, it turns out that the lack of loo paper would be the last of your problems.
Yeah.
Really, if everything else started to run out.
But we're not only reliant on the shops, we're also reliant on other people. And society kind of freaked out and caused problems just from that fear itself.
Yeah, yep. Very much so, yeah.
We're reliant on other people. We're not. You can't isolate fully from society anymore.
And it's kind of a tragedy or a sadness was that it made a lot of people selfish especially in the short term. And what I sort of say, especially in the longer term, medium to longer term, is none of us are going to actually survive by being really selfish. It's actually going to force us to rebuild community.
Yeah.
We talked a bit, I think, on the not that I listened to it all, but I think we talked a bit on the previous podcast about maybe when we lifeboats. Remember, we talked about that, and then we talked about how when we come out of our lifeboats, we might raft them together and start to build community again.
During a crisis, you mean?
When you sort of go into that survival mode, which is a kind of a selfish mode, but we need to, you know, Maslow's hierarchy and all of that. You need to take care of yourself first. But now we're starting to really, we're going to have to start to build stronger, more knowing, more deliberate alliances with the people around us who are going to be part of our, if you like, our little stakeholder group, our little, however we're going to describe ourselves. And it doesn't have to be, yes, relocalised very much, but we've just driven, what, 20 minutes up the road. Is this local? Kind of. And I think building strong alliances. So if we're going to be growing, we'll want to link together with the other growers and then make sure that there's, you know, there's a bit more availability of food. And
so as the situation develops and we're not quite in the trauma that we were, it's still a crisis though, but we're not literally trying to stay afloat. We can start making alliances and trying to sail out into clearer waters, I guess.
You know, I read a series of tweets this afternoon from a nurse in America who's not a particularly old person or anything like that, and they had C19. I was saying, it's just fucking horrible. It's and then loads and loads of kind of just people talking about how it's some people taking months and months to get the symptoms.
Yes.
They now have permanent breathing difficulties or heart problems, and the things that have happened to them, that has, it's a really, really nasty thing. And yeah, you might be lucky, you might be one of those guys who doesn't get it so much, but you know, don't underestimate it. Because I think now we've got a little bit used to it, and we're not freaking out like we were in the first few weeks. And maybe we feel a little bit immune because...
Well, yeah, because we haven't caught it yet. And, I mean, the worry is that, you think it's flu that you'll just recover from, and this crisis will just roll over and head on to the, you know, where we were. But that's not going to happen. You know, people have long-term effects, and this crisis is going to last forever. It's changed things irrevocably.
But, again, I've been saying for quite a long time things like, you know, the climate has changed. We talk about climate change as if it's something that might happen in the future. No, the climate has changed. It's already, we've been hit by series, like you were saying, Category 5 hurricanes
every year,
hitting the Gulf of Mexico every year. And we've had our wettest ever winter followed by our driest ever spring. You know what I mean?
Second sunniest spring. And now it's still extremely dry. And you can see in a garden like this, this is the most lush looking area. Place around this, all these valleys. It's holding on to the little moisture that we have had.
And again, there's this garden and a clearing in a wood, really, in a forest with lots of bracken and lots of gorse, and then the garden itself on very steep ground, and it's holding on to all its moisture very, very well. And this is permaculture. So it's working with local and natural resources. It's catching and storing energy, holding everything in the landscape as long as best as you can, building a fantastic diversity of yields. And of course, the thing about this gardeners as well is it's always been about community.
Yes.
Can you get a spare hand for a minute? So, you know, so a lot of what's happened here is people have met each other and become friends or work together, and some people have got burnt out and moved on, but you know, all of those things happen. But it's been a great place of learning and of growth. And, you know, I was saying the other day, and it's something which I really, really believe, is I think that that we could probably produce a third of our food through the social economy, where the outputs are more about socialising people, bringing socially excluded people back in, and maybe people doing community reparations, or people who are in recovery from long-term illness, like C19, is how are we going to make those people better again? By getting them active, moving around, breathing fresh air. Apparently a lot of the recovery of the virus, you know, it's really good to be in fresh air. Yeah. It's really good to
pollution,
be...
Pollution, it has a very strong link with all that.
Yeah.
And on a personal note, I've got MS, and I've noticed since I've moved to Wales, since I've got my hands back into the soil, community, all these things that you refer to have absolutely helped my health.
It's been kind of transformational, really.
Yeah, with chronic illnesses, if your head is not in the game, then your body soon shuts down. And I've just developed so much, so many good skills, and the community side of it has really helped me, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's so important. So you're saying that the social economy, it's not going to be about the price of the tomato, that's going to be a byproduct.
Exactly right. So it's the idea about food being a byproduct from good socialisation behaviour. Yeah. So if you're going to work with old people, excluded people, people who've been damaged and are in recovery of some form or another, is what a better thing to do with them than a bit of light gardening, a little bit of mulching, a little bit of weeding, a little bit of turning the compost. And actually, if you want to learn, we can bring you into this world and you can get into the soil biology, you can get into, you know, whatever it is you want to do, or you can just treat it as a bit of a socialisation process.
Yes.
But one way or the other is, you end up producing food. And when you get good at it, or you've got someone who's good, you only need one good grower on your team to steer you. I reckon one good, someone like Jude, or our friend Emma in Clonidlois, or you know, whoever, one good gardener could probably organise about 50 other people, right, you know, quite easily, and getting them...
Can you pause?
Yeah, and we'll...
We'll have a... We can be cocky about the thunder.
Well, now we'll head down the hill now,
yeah,
because...
It's rather fast.
I think the storm is coming. But just look how healthy this vegetable... I mean, this is 100% organic garden. So integrated pest management's a big thing for them.
Of course, IPM.
You'll notice up there is a perch for an owl.
Right.
A raptor to encourage,
get a picture of that for our...
encourage, you know, predator species.
Yeah.
It's a lovely frog pond just here. There's a lot of slow worms on this site. They really, slow worms like sunning themselves. It's a very sunny site.
Oh, yeah.
Although we're high up and it's steep, it's very south facing. So there's good population of amphibians here.
Yeah.
And obviously that helps really. These things do not look pest damaged at all, actually.
Borage
in fact, I'm seeing almost
here,
nothing.
Yeah.
Look. Yeah, borage.
Nothing's been chewed that much. So there seems to be a good balance here.
Well, everywhere we're seeing sort of, you know, hedges of herbs and lavender and...
What are these herbs here,
Susan? That's a brassica that's gone to seed.
Ah.
So something like mustard or...
And that's been left just to attract bees?
Again, yeah, it'll feed bees and it will feed hoverflies and you know, other things which will help regulate greenfly populations.
Because I have noticed in permaculture gardening, it's a lot less about getting rid of things and keeping everything perfect. Sometimes...
You're not trying to control the thing. You're trying to sort of...
You're not dominating your garden, you're working with it.
You're conducting it.
You're conducting it.
Well, I was going to take a few photos. It is getting dark, so I think we'll take that as a sign as the rain is coming. But again, you see, we've got
cherry
a cluster
tree
of small buildings, which they've built one by one by one. And little shed. There's another side to that shed, which was used to be the only refuge. Now there's this big one. And I just want to show you this before we leave. This is the pièce de résistance. It's this beautiful building, which is a wattle and daub compost toilet.
Oh, yeah. Look at that. That's a palace with a throne in it.
It really is, you know.
That is royal.
That is, it's special, huh?
Yeah. I've never been so excited about a toilet, I don't think. Maybe when you're in town and you're
Oh, you're really caught short, but
So did you help to construct this?
Numerous PDCs. In fact, you can see these shapes and patterns in the in the mud.
There's a heart.
They were done by on a permaculture design course. I've got a photo on in my office of people on here working on here. So it's really nice to be reminded of that.
Yeah.
I don't know, I've lost count how many different PDC groups we've bought here, up here, and they've all done a little bit of lime plastering or clay rendering on this structure, and probably used the toilet as well.
Yeah. So wild looking, you know.
Especially this town is bursting with life, isn't it? It really is. And diversity. Everywhere you look, it's different. And there's something really wonderful about that. So we were just talking off mic just now, and you were just saying how I mentioned the PDC students and things, but is preparing for this next course is one of the things that's kind of kept us sane, really, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah,
And I think you need projects. We all need projects to be working. Look at the size of that brassica. It's about 8 foot tall.
Is that a tree cabbage?
Yeah, it's just a cabbage, I don't know, or a kale or something.
That's turned into a tree.
Yeah, it's just, they'll go that big.
Yeah, because we've all suffered, obviously, during this period, and we've been quite real. I think it's basically ripped everyone a new one, to pull it not very mildly, but we've all suffered in our own way, and to have projects like you say, to have the connectedness with other people who are also suffering but trying to adjust and do the right things and actually take action.
I think with permaculture, I hope that we can show people ways in back to sanity, back to reconnecting with the land, and you know, reconnecting to self, actually. And there's something saddeningly more really seeing today, those pictures of people queuing outside Primark. Is that what you were missing? Or some cheap socks?
Finally, I can get a hoodie that everyone else has and down the country.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to be the answer. I don't think I want to come down on them, but I think the government is making a lot of mistakes. I think we've all seen how incapable our government is here in the UK.
And they've just got one idea for economy, which is everybody go and buy stupid throwaway shit that we don't need. Yeah. And what, we're going to take our holidays or something? I don't know.
I mean, when they talk about recovery with a capital R, it's about recovering the economy. It's not about health. It's not about actual mental
climate and
repairing the earth. It's about getting the economy. It's about numbers.
And I think mental health, as you said, it's such a key thing. We've had how many years now of this austerity and this aggressive society of making people feel unwelcome, and everyone's a scrounger if you have even the benefits that you're entitled to, that somehow is a bad thing now.
Yeah.
We've got to get past this. We want an inclusive society.
I think there's a lot of guilt in our society. There's a lot of embarrassment. People don't access the help that they can. There's people who won't go to food banks because they're too embarrassed. Food banks, prior to the Tories, there were one or two food banks. I think now there's hundreds.
But this is a food bank. To me, this is what a food bank should look like.
This is wealth, Steve. This is wealth.
This is true wealth. It is soil, community, society, abundance like this.
I think you said that, to quote someone else, I can't remember who, that one thing that you want to invest in, or two things, are community and soil, because those are going to last.
When the banks fail, that's what you'll be left with, right? That's all you've got. Yeah, and ultimately, that is our long-term investment. That's what we should be realising that we're trying to do.
Yeah.
And money's only a tool to help facilitate that process, and if money comes and goes, sometimes you have it, sometimes you don't, sometimes your economy tanks, well, that shouldn't be what you're depending on, you know, that shouldn't be it's difficult to know money around this month or two, but it's a little bit more like that in Uganda. They've got other options because they've got strong community, they basically grow their own food, and everybody's kind of, you know, a bit of a chance spot an opportunity when one comes along.
Yeah, but they're not absolutely failing if they're not bringing in extra amount of money. That's
correct.
Not how they judge their their success.
No, absolutely.
And happiness.
Yeah.
They're not weighing it up by their financial income.
No, and I think we got to realise that, and part of our, you know, emerging from the chrysalis of whatever, quarantine, we've got to really value the things that have real value, which is each other and community, and hard skills. I was chatting to someone online as well earlier today, young person saying, you know, oh, I don't want to get sucked into the rat race, but what can I do? How can I, you know? And, yeah, one of the things is to, one of the secrets is to have low overheads. So you don't need the money so much. Always. That helps.
Yeah.
And then having hard skills and knowing how to take care of yourself without having to buy everything.
Yeah, because a lot of farmers around the UK fall into the trap of the financial incentive of getting a bigger tractor, and then they owe money to pay for that
bigger
tractor.
Bigger loan, yeah.
And they have to get more fields and and they're slaves to it eventually.
You become driven by the need to repay the debt rather than the desire to feed your community.
Yeah, and they're limited in their options. The hand gets forced over time to do things that they may not necessarily have wanted to plan initially.
But I mean, look at this garden. Just before, you know, this is healing. I can feel my body relaxing just being here.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think there's been hundreds of people volunteering continually over the 10 years, you know, rotate 15 years. think of the value of that. Mm. Why do we have to express everything in pounds, shillings and pence? Because this takes away, negates the need for that. Mm. Your food's here, your relaxation is here, your entertainment is here, your opportunity to learn, to expand yourself, to exercise, to relax, all of those things are here,
yeah.
And you're creating them. Oh, and it's sucking out carbon, sucking down carbon, and it's building soil.
Yeah, this is being done right, isn't it, Steve?
It is. And it's shaped like this because it's been shaped by the decisions of the people who made the garden. So if you were to start a garden, or I was to start a garden, or anybody else's, you wouldn't have to make it look like this because it would suit your place and your style of gardening.
Yeah.
But this is what permaculture is. It's the principles. Those things don't change.
Mm-hmm.
So Jude's done it like this because that makes her happy. And the location
is quite unique
The very unique location. It's so steep and all of those things.
Once you've got
those principles in mind, you can create something like this anywhere.
Yeah. I like the fact that it's not... Permaculture gardens aren't exclusive. It's not about, oh, are you allowed in?
Yeah.
They're very open.
They just say no entry on the gate, but no.
We're being chased. No, I'm not saying it's a free-for-all. It's not about exclusivity. I've got the best plants. I've got the best this, that, or the other. It's about doing the best with what you've got. And it's a bit more humble, the whole system.
Yeah, and it's like it's different from an allotment here because everybody's working together.
Yeah.
Rather than... there's your bit and there's my bit and you can see who's got the biggest carrots.
Yeah.
We've got whole beds of different things and it makes a bit more sense at that scale.
We're currently huddling in a little shed because the rain's coming in. So we're still looking around and listening to the birds and feeling the garden, but slightly sheltered too.
I just feel like we're on the edge of something more major coming. But yeah, and again, really important, like there's a little signage, there's a map of the garden, so when you come you can see what's there. There's a key to that as well, which has been nicely written out, so it makes it welcoming to people. You can see what's there.
Yes.
We've got the permaculture ethics on the wall, earth care, people care, fair shares. It's just really important to communicate these ideas to people. And again, that's what you're saying. That's the inclusivity. You're not going, oh, we're a secret society and you've got to know our rules. Mm-hmm. No, our rules are on the wall.
Yeah.
And the more you think about it, the more you meditate on those, the more they, you know...
Because we want this to feed outwards. This isn't about impressing anyone. It's not about ego. It's about education, this spot.
Yeah.
Permaculture should feed outwards. It's not about mine. It's about... collective projects.
Sharing knowledge, sharing information, sharing experience, sharing skills, seeds, spaces, and then together you start to create a wonderful potential thing.
Yeah.
So close your eyes now a little bit, Yossi, and imagine what maybe our garden might be like in 15 years' time, 16, 17, however long we've been here, you know?
Because this is a mature project, isn't it? And you can see they've built it over time and you can't do this overnight.
But
this
I'm not really seeing anything from a garden centre or anything that was like, it's all farm materials, natural materials.
Slate from the hill.
Upcycled old tubs and, you know.
Brilliant. I'm really impressed.
Great. Well, it's been a lovely chat and it's been lovely to be here. And I think we're going to...
Tune in.
Yeah. And Garth Hillside Garden. And they do volunteer days every Thursday morning. Bring some lunch to share. Okay.
Thank you.
Snake Mountain's gonna crumble, Lord, and fall from the sky. For that woman of mine stops telling her lies. Well, if I die, Lord, she'd weep and she'd mourn. Soon as I's buried, forget I'd been born. Love a black skin woman, she won't do you no wrong. Slow to start moaning, she don't moan for long. Oh, a yellow-headed woman brings nothing but pain. Takes all you give her, where she leaves only shame. Oh, my daddy, Lord, he rides on a long, holy train. First winds of winter, I'll see him again. In his farewell to this yellow-headed misery I've known, Snake Man's calling, calling me home. Well, the Snake Man blues got me down low. I could die in the morning, ain't no one would know. All my woman come around, my body she'd find. Go down to Dundee, have her a time.